Take a walk along the High Line, and you might find it strange to see the low-cost supermarket Western Beef on West 16th Street. That's because it's one of the last of its kind, along with the Elliott Chelsea projects remaining in the increasingly gentrifying West Chelsea neighborhood. In a documentary called Class Divide, Mark Levin looks at a community where longtime residents complain that luxury developers and high-end boutiques are pushing them out as wealthy residents move in. He premieres on HBO at 8 o'clock this coming Monday, October the 3rd, and I'm very pleased it has brought Mark Levin to our show today. Hello.
Hey, good to be here.
Do you live in Chelsea?
I do.
How long have you been there?
I've been there 40 years. In a way, I've gone from, I guess, what you could call an urban pioneer, moved into a garment factory, no heat on the weekends. I got domesticated, started a family. In fact, when my mother-in-law first came to visit, she started crying that her daughter ended up in a garment factory on 26th Street.
She's probably very happy.
Yeah. If she was still with us, she would be. I've seen the changes in the neighborhood, raised a family there, and for many, many years thought about how could I tell the story of this change, but which is really a microcosm of what's happening all over.
And you tell the story to some degree through the eyes of local children and teenagers.
Yes, that was an idea that came to the producer Daphne Pinkerson and myself sitting on the High Line on 26th Street and looking at all the tourists who take pictures at that spur, and there's an empty frame behind them. And you hear people in Chinese and French and Portuguese, and then you're thinking, these pictures are going all over the world. Do they know what's right behind them? There's Avenues, the New World School on one side, and there's the Elliott Chelsea housing projects. And we looked at each other and said, wow, maybe the story's right here.
Well, you get the feeling that the kids think a lot more about what's going on in the area than their parents. One of the children you focus on, Rosa, seems to be wise beyond her years.
Absolutely. She's a superstar, and certainly hope that people get to see her and that she has more opportunities because of this film. I think, you put your finger on something, and I got to give Sheila Nevins of HBO credit for kind of saying, stay with the kids. Forget the urbanologists, the sociologists, the political scientists. You don't need them. These kids have a fresh perspective.
Oh, you give us a little bit of that.
We give a taste, but really the story is told through the kids' lives, the kids' eyes. And what's interesting is these kids, even though their worlds are so different, there are certain things they share. And I guess the most surprising one for me, at least in making the film, was they all seem to be very anxious. There's an anxiety about this world that's changing so fast, and where do they fit in?
And they are very aware of the phrase that's the title of your film, the class divide.
They are, and they're not comfortable with it.
Both the kids who come from the upper middle class families and the kids who live in the projects and in some cases are barely surviving.
Exactly. And, you'd think that maybe the privileged kids would be more confident, and yet they know now they're competing against the Chinese, the Koreans, the Russians, the Indians, not just Fieldston and Riverdale. And the kids from the housing project, just the idea of public housing seems at times like an archaic idea. So they're wondering, how long is this thing going to even be here? And my mother and my grandma and other people in my family, where are they going to go?
You mentioned the school, Avenues World School. How different is it from other schools in the city?
Well, it's at the cutting edge of technology. It has a kind of progressive teaching philosophy. But I think it's like a lot of the other top private schools in the city, except that they have the goal, a mission of trying to open campuses all over the world. So that's different.
How much does it cost to go there?
$45,000 a year around.
Wow. Do they offer scholarships to any of the kids in the neighborhood who obviously could not afford that?
They do, and of course that's been the subject of some tension between some of the community and community activists and the school administration. And I think Avenues is becoming more aggressive in trying to find ways to integrate themselves into the West Chelsea neighborhood.
How far is the school from the Elliott Chelsea projects?
It's right across the street. I mean, that's the whole idea here, is the corner of 26th and 10th Avenue, you have this convergence of inequality, gentrification, all these issues that we read about, educational opportunity, they're in play there. And this is a film where you look at all that through the eyes of these kids who want to get to know each other. But there's so many stereotypes and apprehensions that at first it's difficult. But that's kind of the movement of the movie, is toward them starting to talk to each other.
What's the average income of people who live in the projects?
It's about $25,000 a year.
And what's the unemployment rate?
About 50%.
You point out in the film that it's harder in the United States for a child born in poverty to move out of it compared with other developed countries.
Class mobility is a shocker. We all grew up, I certainly did, believing that, if you're poor or working class, and worked hard, you could get ahead. You can get ahead easier now, according to the statistics, in Canada, in Western Europe, in other advanced industrial countries, easier than the United States, which is a shock.
Does living in West Chelsea make that more apparent to both the longtime residents and the newcomers?
I think so. I mean, I think that part of what's unique about New York is how close we are all to each other. So here you've got people live literally right across the street and seeing each other every day. And for a little girl like Rosa, who you just mentioned, that idea that no matter how talented she is, no matter how hard she works at school, that the opportunities for her are going to be less than a little girl that is across the street at Avenues, that's a tough thing to accept.
My guest is Mark Levin, who is the director, writer, and co-producer of Class Divide, which airs on HBO on Monday the 3rd at 8 p.m. Did everything change when the High Line was created?
Well, it started changing after 9/11, really, and the zoning laws changed under the Bloomberg administration in 2004 and 2005. And
so that, the High Line was already in development?
No, that was part of the High Line, part of the deals that were made around the High Line. The High Line is what's amazing is it's one of the unintended consequences are incredible. It was the real estate industry that was against the High Line because they felt it was a blight on West Chelsea and there never could be development until you got rid of it. Look what happened. They created it. It's now one of the top tourist attraction, 2 million New Yorkers a year, and it has catalyzed this gold rush in real estate.
How long after people realized that it was such a success did real estate companies start tearing down the old factories and start rebuilding on the sites?
Well, I would say 2004, 2005, the last 10 years, really. That's when I walk to work at 601 West 26th Street, the Starrett Lehigh building. And that's where, if I went away for a few weeks, I'd come back and a building had disappeared and a new one was going up.
In one scene in your film, a real estate agent shows a client a $10 million townhouse, but the client's worried after she looks out of the window.
Well, look, I think that is realistic, that people obviously, the idea of public safety, the idea that if they're afraid if they live in a low-income, across the street from a low-income housing project, that, maybe their kids might not be as safe. I think it's legitimate, to worry about it.
But the real estate agent speaks about embracing the environment.
Well, look.
She's trying to make a sale?
That's her job, no doubt about it. Look, all of us, I'm born in New York. For me, it goes without saying that the mix of humanity, rich, poor, gay, straight, white, black, that's what makes this city what it is. That's the magic. You take that away, what do you got? You got a sterile, gilded cage. Who wants to live in that?
But isn't the new housing stock in this area among the most expensive in the city? Huge apartments, 20,000 square feet, I think somebody said one of them was. Some have their own swimming pools.
This, I think, goes to the bigger question of global cities, and that's not just New York. This is happening all along the East Coast, the West Coast. It's happening in London. It's happening in Shanghai, in Hong Kong. They have become safety deposit box investments for the global elite.
So people are not living in these apartments?
They're not living. Some of these buildings are called zombie buildings because the actual purchasers, whether it's an LLC or a Saudi businessman or a Russian plutocrat, They come maybe once a week. I mean, once a year. But it's basically an investment, a safe place to park their money. So that's a global phenomenon.
And it's become more expensive than Park Avenue and some of the other places we think of as the more expensive parts of New York
City.
That's
true, and I'm facing that now. I said to you at the beginning of this that in many ways I've kind of seen the full cycle from urban pioneer, creative class now to potentially displaced in terms of my studio and my company because, you know, when my lease runs out, the rents are exorbitant. They are Park Avenue or Sixth Avenue rents.
And has the local industry totally disappeared, the meatpacking industry, replaced by the Whitney Museum?
It has. My grandfather, believe it or not, worked in the meatpacking industry right down there on 13th Street. The studio I have was a printing factory. When I first walked into it in the mid-90s, you couldn't see out the windows because of the dirt and the grime. Now, Starrett-Lee High Building is mostly fashion and media companies.
The students of the Avenue School spoke about walking to school through the housing projects. Do their parents and teachers feel that they shouldn't take that route?
I think the first year or two, there was certainly apprehension about walking down 26th Street and 25th Street and advised some of the young people to use 23rd Street. I think that is changing now. I think, this, as I said, the school is working much closer with the Hudson Guild at the Elliott Chelsea projects. I know some of the young Spanish students are actually working with the senior citizens in the community center, taking their oral history. So there's much more interaction.
Two of the younger adults in the documentary, Yasmin and Juwan, met up with each other to discuss the differences in their lifestyles. Who organized that conversation?
That was through the Hudson Guild. The community center there had helped make that happen. And, you know, I was listening to your conversation earlier with the gentleman, and it reminded
me— Timothy Gardnash.
Yes. Reminded me of kind of where this film goes, these kids trying to break out of the boxes and the worlds that they're in and that so many of us are in and that we don't talk to each other.
And they're very aware of the class divide. One of the young African-American wealthier kids, privileged kids, says that The poor kids don't see him as a brother, as another fellow African-American. They see him as a rich kid.
Actually, I think it might be backwards. It might be Hashim, who's from the project, and says that he could approach an African-American lawyer or doctor who would see him as a kid from the projects. You know, so they are... What you just said, I think, is the bottom line, that this is a generation, both sides of the street, that realize that economic inequality is one of the great challenges that they're going to face as they grow up and that their generation is going to have to figure out how to fix.
Ricardo Scofidio, who is the architect behind the High Line, spoke about how he was in a competition to create affordable housing and won second place. And when he asked the jury why... They said his plan was too good.
I found that shocking myself, I think that speaks to the question of how we look at public government programs, public support for those who are less fortunate, and whether the commitment is still there that maybe when we grew up, you know, there was a much stronger commitment.
Is one of the solutions in this area the development of the so-called poor door?
Well, let's put it this way. The largest urban development project in the United States is going up there now, Hudson Yards. And there is a deal there to make a certain percent, 20 to 30% of the residential housing there affordable. Now, whether there'll be a poor door, which, you know, you're familiar with, is a separate entrance for those who are coming in on the affordable side, that is a big question, I think, that they're wrestling over right now.
How are you able to locate some of these people? You speak to an undocumented immigrant. I guess you meet him through Joel. His father talks about how his boss treats him badly at work because he's undocumented. Do we know how many undocumented immigrants are currently living in New York City and in that area?
I think there's, this is off memory, it's 500,000 undocumented immigrants in New York City. I think the reason Joelle's father was willing to appear on camera was there was a feeling when we shot this 2014 and 15 that the country and the administration was moving in a way that they wouldn't be threatened with deportation. Since then, unfortunately, the Supreme Court has made a ruling that affected that, and of course, Trump's campaign is threatening to deport some of people like Joelle's father. So I that scene now has a lot more poignancy to me than it did when we actually filmed it.
Mark Levin is the director, writer, and co-producer of Class Divide, which airs on HBO this coming Monday, October 3rd at 8 p.m. Thank you so much for being on our show today.
I appreciate you having me.